got to start out taking a little bit deeper look at alternative energy systems, how to become free from dependence on utilities. Now remember, we started out this morning by giving you an overview of how alternative energy works. And you remember, we had the option of starting out with just your basic system, which is just a generator, inverter, battery bank, and using this kind of a system, we were able to get our foot in the door with alternative energy for the least amount of upfront money and get us started at least, take the first step and get less dependent than we are right now. Then as we're able to, you remember we added the solar panels or micro hydro generator or wind turbines or things along these lines that enable us to become energy independent. And this whole package here is really kind of gives you alternative energy in a nutshell. And the neat thing about taking it step by step is that you're still going to need your inverter later on when you step up to a better system. And it's always nice to have a generator as a backup, even if you do have the solar panels and things like this. So these are, and the batteries, you need the batteries. So these are not wasted things. We're going to need them anyway. And so with that in mind, just a quick recap of what we looked at this morning. With that in mind, I want to take a look at more detail on each of these components. And so why don't we start out with kind of the brain center of the whole operation, and that would be our inverter or our inverter charger. Now this is actually a picture of an inverter here. And just to give you an idea of the size of this thing, I wish I could have brought one with us, but this particular inverter, probably about that wide, about that high, and about that thick. Probably, I think they weigh, this particular one weighs around 80 pounds or so. A good quality inverter will be kind of heavy. If it's very lightweight, it probably is not a very good quality inverter. Now, one factor that we need to take a look at is the power rating of the inverter. And simply, you can find an inverter that's 2,500 watts, 3,000 watts, 3,600 watts, so on and so forth. It's just telling you how much electricity it can deliver to you at any one point in time. Now, just in case we have anyone new who wasn't here this morning, you remember the main purpose of the inverter, there were two main purposes. One was to take the electricity from our generator and charge the batteries up, and the other was to take that electricity from the batteries and convert it back into AC electricity so that we can now use it in our house. Because remember, we're using AC in our house for almost everything. So, this is an important piece of our whole alternative energy system, and what size would be a good size? Well, I would recommend that you go with somewhere around a 2,500 to 3,600 watt inverter. 2,500 would be kind of on the low end. 3,600 watt inverter, somewhere around there, would be a good size. We have a 3,600 watt inverter, and it has worked very well for us. It's been an excellent size. If you're on a tight budget, you can go with a smaller one and save some money there, but you will be a little bit more limited. You won't be able to run as many things at the same time. So getting a larger one just gives you more options. But with a lot of these things, you'll find that it depends upon your budget. A lot of these items, your decision will be based upon your budget. So power rating and watts, that gives you an idea. Sine wave or modified sine wave. Now that looks like a pretty technical term, but it's actually not too difficult. We're talking about clean electricity versus, what can we say, maybe unclean electricity. And just to give you an idea of the difference between sine wave and modified sine wave, this is the clean kind of electricity that you get from the power company right now. Modified sine wave is a little different. Let's take a look at it. This really tells you the difference. If you were to look at the electricity in a scope, you'd see a wave pattern for the true sine wave being this nice rounded wave here. Nice clean electricity. See the red there? That is modified sine wave. This red, see that 90 degree edge up and then 90 degrees down like this? This is your modified sine wave. The electricity is not as clean. If I were to plug my computer into a modified sine wave inverter, I would probably hear the transformer buzzing. In fact, I would, because I've done it. And if you were to do audio recordings, for instance, with a modified sine wave inverter, you would probably hear a hum in the background. That just gives you an idea of what we're talking about. Modified sine wave will actually, even though it's not as clean electricity, it will do almost anything that you need to do. It's not as good as a pure sine wave inverter. Pure sine wave inverter is going to, of course, be cleaner electricity. There's less to go wrong, more energy efficient, etc. But the reason that I even bring up the modified sine wave inverters is because they are much cheaper. You can buy a modified sine wave inverter for about half the cost of a pure sine wave inverter. So once again, it's kind of a budget decision. If you can afford a pure sine wave inverter, that's the way to go. I believe your electronics will last longer, and it's just a better route to go. But if you're on a tight budget and can't afford it, by all means, go with the modified sine wave inverter. I could live just fine on a modified sine wave inverter. And, I mean, it need be, if you had some sophisticated electronics that you had to run, you could buy a very small, pure sine wave inverter specifically for that particular piece of electronics. So there's options out there. It's kind of a decision of budget. Now, brand. What would be a good brand of inverter? Well, here's the two that I can recommend as being top quality. That would be Outback and Vantrax. These would be the two best names out there. There are others out there that may be good, but these I have personal experience with and have friends and have friends that use them. We actually have an Outback and I have a Vantrax, and they work very well. Outback is a little bit better though. And I will tell you one thing, you may, if you are looking for a used inverter, which is certainly a possibility to do, you may find an inverter made by a company called Trace, T-R-A-C-E. The reason I say that you'll only find it used is because they were bought out several years ago by Zantrax. So there are no longer any Trace inverters made, but several years ago they were making Trace inverters, and they were also very good. So if you find a used Trace inverter, T-R-A-C-E, they would also be very good. And you can look for used inverters places. You may find them on Craigslist or someplace like that, probably, or eBay, but probably the most likely and one of the better places to find it would be alternative energy retailers. A lot of them sell used equipment because people will trade in their old inverter to upgrade to a better one. So you may find someone who traded in their old modified sine wave inverter to step up to a pure sine wave inverter. Yes, sir? Do they wear out? They really do not have an expected lifespan, so I can't tell you inverters last X number of years. They are man-made, so they can break, but there isn't really any expected lifespan. With batteries, there's an expected lifespan. Even solar panels have somewhat of an expected lifespan. We really don't know how long they will last, though. But they're really, it's not something that I can tell you is going to wear out. It may break, but it doesn't really have an expected lifespan. Okay, moving on very quickly to batteries. Now, batteries are a very important piece of our equipment. And this is a picture of a battery because this is a special kind of battery. It's kind of similar to your car battery, but yet it's very different. This is a very large, very heavy-duty battery. This is probably one of the most commonly used batteries in alternative energy systems. It's a middle-of-the-road battery. If it were sitting right here, it would probably be about that tall, be about that wide, and about that thick, weighs about 120 pounds for one battery, because the thing is full of lead. It's a lead-acid battery. And so it is similar in that respect to your car battery, but it's different because this is a deep cycle battery. Your car battery is a shallow cycle battery. Now, we can't get into too much technical stuff here, but basically to make it, to get to the short and sweet of it, a shallow cycle battery is made to just use a very small portion of the capacity of that battery. In other words, you start your car, it uses the electricity to start your car, and then it gets charged right back up, because the alternator in your car charges it right back up. And so you're not discharging the battery very deeply. That's a shallow cycle battery. If you were to take a shallow cycle battery and discharge it very deeply, you would ruin it in short order. With alternative energy, we need to be able to discharge our batteries more deeply. So, we need a deep cycle battery. Now, you may have heard of deep cycle batteries in the form of a marine battery, or maybe RV batteries, things like this. This is actually different than even a marine battery. This is heavier duty, larger, holds more electricity, so on and so forth. And so this is the kind of battery that we're looking for. I will tell you, this particular battery is made by Trojan, T-R-O-J-A-N. They are one of the best known alternative energy battery manufacturers. So they make their batteries specifically for alternative energy. And they're not the best, but they're not the worst. And they're kind of middle of the road company. And this particular battery is the L16. L is in Lima, 16. And that's just the size of battery, the L16, probably one of the most common alternative energy batteries out there. But I will say, there are other options. For instance, if you happen to have connections with someone who works at a warehouse where they use these huge electric forklifts and things like that, or you might go online, you can sometimes find places that have forklift batteries. That is an excellent alternative. Forklift batteries are very heavy duty. Probably my next set of batteries will be a forklift battery. And so that is a great alternative. I have a friend who has a warehouse type company nearby. And they use forklifts there, and they change out the batteries in their forklift quite frequently. I think they change them out after a year or two, and those batteries last a long time. And so he will buy their used batteries for very little money and then use them, and they still have usable life left on them. So there are some low-cost alternatives for batteries. Now, the size of the battery, the unit of measurement that's used to measure how much electricity that battery can hold is the amp hour, just like an inch, a pound, or a gallon, just a unit of measurement, the amp hour. And that's going to enable you to compare one battery with another, or if you're kind of a techie person and you want to design your own system, this will enable you to figure out how many batteries you need for your system. One battery may be 300 amp hours, another one may be 420, another one may be 500 amp hours. Just lets you know how much electricity they hold. How many batteries do you need? Well, I can't really answer that question because it's going to depend upon your energy usage. And friends, here is the punchline of the entire seminar. If you don't go home with anything else from this alternative energy seminar, here's your punchline. The more energy efficient you get, the less money you have to spend on your system. If you want to really save money with alternative energy, then get as energy efficient as you possibly can. Because if you're using less electricity, you don't have to build such a large system. And that's the way that you can really save a lot of money. So when people get sticker shock by being blown away with some enormous price that they're given for converting their house over to solar or something like that, it's usually because they have not become energy efficient. And we'll go into appliances in a little bit. This is where we can really save a lot of electricity. We can still live very normally. We just need to be careful with our power usage, and you can save a bundle of money by doing that. So how many batteries do you need? Probably the best way to figure this out is going to be to talk with an alternative energy retailer. Almost all of the ones that I'm aware of offer the free service of designing your system for you if you buy your equipment from them. And so they will design it for you. They'll probably send you a sheet of paper where you fill out an estimate of how much electricity you use. And so you may tell them, oh, I do 5 loads of wash a week, and I run the vacuum cleaner for 30 minutes a week, and I run 4 lights for 5 hours a day. It's just a rough guess. It doesn't have to be exact. You're just giving them some sort of an idea of how much electricity you generally use, and then they will calculate, they will design a system for you, and they'll calculate how many batteries it would be good to have. In our situation, when we set up our system, as I have mentioned this morning, we were on quite a budget. We were on a real tight budget. And so we couldn't afford as many batteries as we would have liked to have gotten. We ended up just getting 4 of these L16 batteries. That's a small battery bank. We have lived okay on it, but it would be much better if we had 8. So that gives you kind of a rough idea for a very energy-conserving small cabin probably you're going to want to go with 8 batteries, somewhere about in that range. If you use a little more power, you may need to step up to 12. It's just going to depend on your budget and how energy efficient you're able to get, and the lifespan. Now here is where the little saying, you get what you pay for, comes in, because you really do get what you pay for. You can buy a cheap battery that may only last 3 to 5 years, or you can buy a very expensive battery that may last 20 years. And of course you have anywhere in between. This battery right here, the Trojan L16, is kind of a middle-of-the-road battery. Lifespan, you're looking at probably 8 years, maybe if you're real careful, 10 years, somewhere around there. That's the middle-of-the-road price. But I will say, if you have the money up front, it's actually a better deal to get the expensive batteries that last a long time, because when you figure it out of cost per year, it actually ends up being less than something like this. So once again, it's going to depend on your budget. If you have the money up front and you want to save in the long run, then I would recommend going that route. One battery that you might look into is made by a company called HUP, H-U-P, H-U-P, and it's the HUP Solar One, O-N-E, Solar One, as in the number one, O-N-E, the HUP Solar One. That's probably the best battery on the market that I'm aware of. And that just gives you a rough idea. We'll talk about prices of systems in a little bit. Battery, you can buy a cheap battery for between $100 and $200. This battery here, I think these days it's been fluctuating quite a bit with the price of lead. This battery, I believe, is somewhere in the realm of $300, $350, somewhere around there. The top solar one, I believe you're looking at, see, one HUP Solar One battery is going to be the equivalent of multiple lesser batteries. So you're looking at maybe a couple $1,000 for a battery, but it's actually taking the place of maybe 4 or 8 of the other batteries. So it's a lot of money up front, but it is a better investment in the long run, a little bit better. Okay, moving on to generators. Now, once again, I don't want to focus too much on generators because we're still dependent on fuel with our generators, but it is nice to have them as a backup. Even after you get the solar or the hydro or what have you, it is nice to have a generator backup so that if you do have something go down or for whatever reason, it's nice to have a generator. So if you can afford it, it really is a good idea to have a generator. And we want to take a look at some factors to make a good investment with our generator. And of course, the power rating, my recommendation to you would be somewhere in the realm of 5 to 7 kilowatts. Now everyone understands, 1 kilowatt is 1,000 watts, 5 kilowatts are 5,000 watts, 7 kilowatts are 7,000 watts. So 5 to 7 kilowatts, somewhere in that range, would be an ideal size generator for me, in my mind. And the reason I say that is it only takes 2,000 watts or so to run our charger and charge our batteries up. But we like to multitask. While that generator is running for several hours to charge the batteries up, we do everything we can that takes a lot of electricity. So while we're charging the batteries up, we'll be doing the laundry. That runs the washing machine, the water pump, the dryer. We may iron our clothes. That takes a lot of power. We may run the vacuum cleaner. Things like this. Anything that takes a lot of electricity, we'll try to do it during that time period when the generator is running anyway. And you can really save. You can really become very efficient by doing that. And the only way you can do that is if you have a generator that's large enough to enable you to do multiple things at the same time. So, bare minimum would be 3,500 watt generator. You can get by with that. In fact, we have spent the whole last winter using our old 20-year-old 3,500 watt generator because our main generator was temporarily down. And so we did okay, but you have to juggle things a little more. You can't do as many things at the same time. So you may, while you're charging your batteries, you may be able to turn the washing machine on, but then you got to wait for the washer to go off before you turn the dryer on. You know, not quite that severe. You can have multiple things on, but you get the idea. You have to juggle things a little bit more if you go with a smaller generator. But having said that, I would much rather see you get a good quality smaller generator than a cheap large generator. And here's the reason. You get a large generator that's very cheap, and you start having issues like power surges and things like this. We know of a guy who wanted to save a buck, and he went to Sam's Club or Costco or someplace like that and got a discount generator. The night came where they got a blackout. He started his generator up and had everything on in the house, and he was feeling pretty smug, but he was ready. And then his wife came home and hit the button for the garage door opener and had a power surge for thousands of dollars of electronics. These are the kinds of things that happen when you get a cheap generator. So, if you're on a tight budget, I'd rather see you get a good quality small generator than a cheap large generator. Okay, RPMs. What does RPM stand for? Anybody know?
Per minute.
Revolutions per minute. There we go. Why is this important? Well, just think about it for a minute. If I have one generator that's running at 3,600 revolutions per minute, and I have a second generator that's running at 1,800 revolutions per minute, all other things being equal, which one is going to last longer? 1,800 RPMs. Why? Because it's only running half as fast. So it's only making half the revolutions that the 3,600 RPM generator is. So this is an important consideration. When you start looking into a good quality, heavy-duty generator, you're going to be looking at 1,800 RPM generators. Now, as you'll see in just a little bit, there are some 3,600 RPM generators that I do recommend with certain stipulations. But if you want the best, highest quality generator, you're going to want to go with a 1,800 RPM generator. Fuel type, diesel, gasoline, or propane. There's a lot of debate about this, and so I just want to take just a few minutes and take a look at the pros and cons. Diesel. Pros would be you have more fuel options, and we mentioned this earlier this morning. You have the option of all kinds of different oils that can run in a diesel engine. Rudolph Diesel invented the diesel engine to run on peanut oil to make the farmer independent, so he could grow his own peanuts, press the oil, run his tractors, and what have you. You can run, we know of a shortwave station in the South Pacific that runs its transmitters off of a diesel generator running on coconut oil. We know of people running used motor oil in their diesel engines, hydraulic fluid, all kinds of things. So there's, of course, restaurant cooking oil. There's a lot of options out there, and that is a pro. Diesel engines, all other things, as a general rule, last considerably longer, and they are more fuel efficient. However, the cons are that diesels are generally significantly more expensive, and they are louder, and the diesel has a limited fuel shelf life. So diesel only lasts so long. While I'm thinking about it, let me tell you about the best fuel stabilizer out there. If you do happen to go with a gasoline or diesel generator, and you want to know how to store that fuel for as long as possible, fuel can go bad in as little as a year. And so the best one that we have ever come upon, I'll give you a website, priproducts.com. P is in Papa, R is in Romeo, I is in India, priproducts.com. And it's a company, I think it's Petroleum Research Incorporated. They make a product called PRIG, that's for gasoline. They also make a product, PRID, that's for diesel. And this product will extend the shelf life up to 10 years. Yeah, that's quite impressive. We have actually stabilized fuel for up to 5 or 6 years, and it ran just fine in the car after that using this product. So that's a great way to go. But you do have the limited fuel shelf life. Gasoline engines. They are less expensive than diesel. Cold weather starting, as a general rule, they are a little easier to start in cold weather, but if you get a good diesel, they can start very well in cold weather also. But gasolines are a little easier generally to start in cold. They are lighter weight, usually, and quieter than a diesel. Cons would be that, of course, the gasoline engine is not as durable, is less fuel efficient, and you still have that limited fuel shelf life. Now, the other option with propane, there is an advantage here. It's less expensive.
Yes, well, some propane generators are less expensive, some are not. You can find propane generators that are just as expensive as diesel, so that may or may not be the case. Cold weather starts easier. The big advantage to propane is indefinite fuel shelf life. Propane lasts for 100 years, it doesn't go bad. So that is a pro. Quieter, but propane, once again, like gasoline, as a general rule, less durable, less fuel efficient. And you have very limited fuel options. You can't just run down to the gas station and get some unleaded. You can't siphon some gasoline out of your fuel tank in your truck if all else fails. You're pretty limited on your fuel options. So those are some pros and cons. Hopefully be helpful to you. Some brands, I've got to run through this real quickly. Perkins, Kubota, Bonan, and Isuzu, if you want to go with the diesel. For gasoline, I recommend Honda. We've had great service out of Honda. And let me just tell you, friends, you can save a significant amount of money by going with something like a Honda rather than a diesel. And especially if you're going to end up with solar, you're not going to be running your generator a lot. And so it may actually work out to be better for you in the long run. Spend less money on your generator, put the money that you save into solar panels or things like this. And I think that could be a good route to go. But if you want to have the best, then diesel is the way to go. Propane, solar, and Oman make some good propane generators. Or there's the poor man's generator. I don't have time to spend a lot of time on this. This is actually what I have. And it's basically, you can buy a kit. If you picked up one of those backwoods solar catalogs on our table, they have a kit in there called a battery booster kit. What this is it's basically a small engine hooked up to the alternator that would normally go in a car, and that alternator turns as the engine turns and produces DC electricity just like it does in your car, and it's used to charge your batteries. That's what your alternative energy is. Okay, moving on, I'm just about out of time, so we'll just breeze through some of the solar. Is there consistent sun in your area? This is not necessarily a make it or break it factor. You can use solar in areas where they have dark periods of time. It's just you're going to have to come up with an alternative means of charging your batteries during those dark times of the year. For us, that would be like November, December, January, maybe kind of February. Those months are darker, and so you have to come up with an alternative means, whether it be hydro, wind, or what most people end up doing is using a generator, a fuel-powered generator, during those winter months when the solar panels are not producing enough electricity. And this is an interesting map. You can look up these solar insulation maps. The Backwoods Solar Catalog has one. It tells you where the better areas are for solar, and then you can see where the bad areas are there. There. And so it's an interesting thing to take a look at. And low maintenance solar panels are wonderful. No low maintenance, no property specific resources required. But do remember, you're not generating anything during the night, and you're only getting maximum generation when it's sunny outside. So these are some of the pros and cons of solar panels, but I really like them. We ended up going with the solar system because it's so easy and it's just really, really nice. Okay. Very quickly on hydro, basically using the power of gravity pushing water downhill to spin a little wheel around and produce electricity. And lower initial costs usually for a hydro system because it's charging 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And so there's usually lower initial costs. However, your property may cost more because it has a creek. So these things can kind of equal out. But most people that I've talked with who have a hydro system, they love it. And so if you are able to find a place with a suitable creek, it's great because it generates 24/7. The more it rains, the more power you get. It does require more maintenance, and it requires a creek with enough flow and fall. And we're talking preferably, you want to get up to at least 20 feet and fall, hopefully more, 30 or 40 feet is even better. You don't have to have a waterfall, it can be gradual fall, but 10 feet would be the bare, bare minimum, but you're probably not going to get a lot of power out of 10 feet of fall. So higher is better. And you can take the measurements of how many gallons per minute your creek is during the dry time of the year, and how much fall you have, and call the company that you're going to buy your unit from, and they can give you an idea of how much electricity you'll be producing. And then you do have the legal considerations, particularly in some states. Some states are worse than others about this, the legal considerations of putting a hydro unit on a creek. Okay, our final section, appliances, what you can do. Friends, we live very normally. Lighting, no problem. Go with your compact fluorescent light, LED lights, things like this that use a lot less electricity. You'll be in good shape. Kitchen appliances, not a problem because they're not running continuously. The blender, the juicer, things like this, you're running them for a short period of time. And so it's certainly feasible to do. We certainly do it. An efficient refrigerator or freezer, this is one of your most important considerations. Go with, find the smallest unit that will work for you, and then look for Energy Star models. You're familiar with Energy Star appliances. Go to a store that has a large selection, find the most efficient unit in that size that will work for you, and you should be in good shape because they are making refrigerators and freezers much more efficient these days. It didn't always used to be that way. A hair dryer, no problem, because you're not running it all the time. Computers, no problem. However, laptops use a lot less power. Office equipment, inkjet printers are much better than laser jet printers for power usage. Vacuum cleaner, not a problem. Efficient water pump. In the Backwoods Solar catalog, you'll see a number of water pumps that are very suitable for alternative energy. Most of your standard water pumps are not going to be suitable. 240 volts use a lot of electricity. So the ones in that catalog are a really good selection of very efficient water pumps. Ceiling fans, not a problem. Washing machine, go with a front-loading washing machine and you'll do yourself a big favor. Saves a lot of water, a lot of power, a lot of detergent. And et cetera, et cetera. Okay, what you cannot do, basically, your major electric heating appliances, like an electric water heater, electric forced air heating system, an electric oven or range, and an electric clothes dryer. These things use massive amounts of electricity, and it would be cost prohibitive to build a system large enough to power these things. And we don't need these to be electric. We have great alternatives. You can go with a propane water heater, propane oven or range, propane clothes dryer. For heat, I recommend wood heat. The way to go, energy independent, nothing like it. But you can go with propane for these others, or if you want to get even more independent, you can go with wood or solar water heater. Wood cook stoves are a great route to go for drying your clothes. Have you heard of solar clothes dryers? High-tech, state-of-the-art, they involve a line and some wooden clothespins. And you may be familiar with a very energy-efficient dishwasher. It involves some elbow grease and a couple of hands. Any efficient large refrigerator or freezer, leave them behind, friends. You need one of the newer, very efficient models. Air conditioning is also going to use massive amounts of electricity. They are coming out with newer air conditioners that are much more energy efficient. You can Google solar air conditioners, and they use a lot less power. But here where it's dry, you can go with swamp coolers and things like that. Use a lot less power, and they can work in a low humidity area. Partial basements can help cupolas on the top, or attic vents can also help things like that. So system cost, bottom line, minimalist system, you're looking at somewhere in the neighborhood of $2,000 for, we're talking a very, very small system. This would almost be like a backup system or a hunting cabin type system. Very small. This is not something that probably a family is going to want to live on long term. This is if you're on a really, really, really shoestring budget. For a more decent system that would be more livable, you're looking at $7,000 would get you a pretty decent system that would be more livable. And if you wanted to add a solar package on later, you could add a 500 watt solar package, around $3,000 for the solar package, somewhere in that realm. And that gives you kind of a rough idea of how much money we're talking for a workable system that can work. And if this is out of your price range, then here's what I've got to say to you. You're going to need to be thinking about, well, let me tell you about some companies, but what I was going to say is, if alternative energy, if this is something that you cannot do right now, then you're going to need to be looking into non-electric. I'm not saying you have to live non-electrically, but you need to be looking at how you can take care of your basic necessities of life without electricity. And I'll have that coming up in just a minute. Backwoodsolar.com, thesolar.biz, and solar-electric.com. Please write this down real quickly because I've got to move on to my final slide. Backwoodsolar.com, thesolar.biz, and solarelectric.com. Backwoods Solar is more expensive, but they're some of the most knowledgeable guys. These guys are very knowledgeable, and they have some of the best prices in the industry. And Solar Electric also has pretty good prices, too. That's Arizona Wind and Sun. Okay, moving on to our final slide, non-electric. Some things that you need to consider if you can't afford alternative energy, maybe even if you can't. And that would be like root cellar or spring house instead of a refrigerator. If you can't produce your own electricity, you need to have a way to keep fresh produce. Well, for a hand pump or a drop bucket, this is a must for any well. No matter how good your system is, you need to have a hand pump on that well so you can get the water out. Wood stove, wood cook stove is a non-electric option for heating, kerosene, propane lamp, manual hand tools, things like this. So, et cetera, et cetera, and that brings us to the close of alternative energy.
And I don't think I've ever talked so fast in my life, so I'm sorry.